What's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 79. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
Melissa.
This is Ethan.
And you'll notice we didn't quite have the same music. Dude, I can't get used to that voice. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I tried. It's just like, ladies. I got permission from Jamin and Kyle Winans to use part of the Ink soundtrack for our intro this week because I had a chance to talk with him, and it's playing at the Egyptian, I think, on the 10th. So just kind of little hype
sweet,
it up.
Sweet, sweet music. This is our ink spot for the week. I mean, we're gonna spread the inkage around until this thing comes on DVD. I mean,
Exactly. Well, and it's at a cool theater. We'll play the interview here in a little bit. But yeah, if you're in LA, seriously, you need to check this out. So this week, we're actually going to kind of combine what came out this week and what we watched this week. We're just going to start with Up, and with us on the phone, just because, you know, there aren't enough people on the show right now. Chris Stipp from Quickstop Entertainment. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing fine. Thank you very much for having me.
Calling us from a kids' party, right?
Appropriately enough, yes.
Fair enough. All right. So let's... I don't think any of us thought Up was a bad movie.
No, I loved it.
No, it was excellent.
Yeah. Okay, did you like it, Ethan?
Yes, I did, quite a bit.
Okay, the reason I wanted to talk about this, and the reason why I begged Stipp to come on, Mr. Stipp, is because there's been an interesting, I wouldn't say so much as a backlash against it, but a lot of parents who have said that their kids either were bored during the movie or were scared during it. It just wasn't very kid appropriate as far as the material went, and I'm wondering if anyone else kind of thought that could possibly be the case as well.
Well, I was kind of shocked by the one scene in the movie where, you know, Carl, he hits the guy over the head and he's bleeding.
Yeah, there's like three instances of blood in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when I saw it, both screenings I went to, both a preview screening and also the opening night screening, kids were crying whenever the lead Doberman was attacking them in 3D.
Wow.
Yeah, there were the whole horde of kids who had to be escorted out of the theater because they were crying and they were scared, going, Mommy, the doggy. So, yeah.
I felt like I felt like there was enough comic relief for kids. I thought the little kid in the movie was relatable to kids that age. And when the dogs were flying the planes and stuff, I just thought that was kind of really lame. And it was like, okay, well, there's the kid element of it.
Yeah.
And... I mean, I really enjoyed it, and I'm not an 8-year-old or anything, so I don't know how a kid would react to that. But. Hmm.
So, Chris, what have you heard?
Well, I've kind of heard almost the same thing as what everyone else was saying. I took both my 5-year-old and 3-year-old, and they both liked it. And, you know, when they were explaining to their mother what they thought of it, the first words that both of them used were sad. Mm. You know, they didn't say, you know, silly or funny or, I mean, those are adjectives that they used, you know, later on. They said it was sort of sad. And then, you know, they talk about the talking dog and they thought that was funny, you know. But there's been no real, which I thought's been interesting, no real, like, desire for them to want to see it again. Whereas when we came home that night after seeing it last weekend, Night at the Museum's been on, and we DVR'd it, and given the choice of having to go back to see Up or you know, stay home and watch a movie, they both want to just watch Night at the Museum again and again and again. You know, it's
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Well, I don't have to be in the same room. It's the wonder of TiVo. electronic babysitter. But it made a real point to me that it's a wonderful movie, and I know I was, you know, verge of tears by the end of it. I mean, it's very sweet, and it's a great movie all around. It's just it's not one of those ones where it's like a Toy Story where you can see a lot of, you know, it's not harmless. It's a very, you know, touching, moving story that just happens to be animated.
Gotcha. Now, the reason why I initially wanted to talk about this was I was concerned that Pixar may get less business because of how mature this movie is. Granted, the fact that it's taken its second week in a row kind of negates that whole idea, I think, a bit. But does anyone think that possibly parents might not avoid a Pixar movie outright, but maybe second guess it, be like, well, the last one, I don't know, we'll see about this one. Maybe I'll check the reviews first or something like that.
No, and I'll say that right away. I know we brought it up even before, you know, all this happened, was that my feeling is that people, you know, in mass, you know, for the large part, are just, you know, and I won't say dumb, because that'd be inappropriate and inconsiderate, but if people are willing to say, okay, maybe this isn't right for me, maybe it's not right for my kids, but give them 11 months where they see, you know, if any of you have seen the Toy Story 3 trailer, and then boom, they're going to be right back in line. So, you know, this is definitely a hit, obviously, for Pixar, and, you know, it's just, we're all having the conversation of, is it more mature, is it, you know, not so much a kiddie movie, you know, all that is irrelevant when you think that, you know what, 10, 11 months from now, people are going to be right back in line, willing to give, you know, Pixar their money, because at the end of the day, they just make good films.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, go ahead, Ethan.
Well, sorry, but, like, we're talking about this like Pixar made, like, Requiem for a Dream or something. Like,
I understand, like, that, but you understand what I'm saying, too.
This movie still has an uplifting ending, like, yeah, a nice happy ending, and yeah, you know, a nice credit sequence with a dog chasing a squirrel and them eating ice cream, and, you know, it's like, come on, this movie isn't, like, a depressing, like, yeah, it's sad, but it's not, it has a nice message. And I think as long as...
And it definitely is a throwback. Oh, go ahead, Chris.
No, I'm agreeing with what he's been saying. It is. It's a very uplifting movie, and I think that's why you want to sort of cry at the end. That you're just so happy about, you know this, you know, spoiler warning, this guy actually finding something to live for now, and, you know, and finding reason to enjoy life, and you know, being able to move on. And I think that's a wonderful message. But, you know, tell that to a 5-year-old who has, you know, barely learned to, you know, use the bathroom, you know, obviously it's going to be lost on them, you know, but for adults, it's got a wonderful, wonderful message. It's something for everyone.
And I think, to be fair, it also, it's very much a throwback to the 80s when things weren't necessarily sugar-coated for kids in quote-unquote children's films. You had loss, you had, you know, death even, you know, but it was a part of it. It's kind of the whole you have to have human trial in order to have the human triumph thing. But it's just, right, you know, I'm kind of wondering, there's been enough people saying, yeah, I didn't really like it, that I was just kind of, I'm curious, what do people think of this?
This is not going to go away, this argument, because this started, I think, back with The Incredibles, the argument that the film, it's too plot-heavy, it's the first 20 minutes is too much exposition, there's not enough action, the kids are going to be bored because nothing's going on, there's no talking animals in the beginning of the movie. Yeah, you know, and I think the thing that's so wonderful about Pixar is it's not a kiddie film, it's a children's film. It's a chance for children to really be engaged in these really rich stories. That all these Pixar movies are about people trying to find what their kind of what their role in life is, you know, and also dealing with death in some cases. I think it's better for kids to deal with the issue of death in something like, you know, that's something kind of removed, like Toy Story, or something that's head on, like Up, as opposed to Schindler's List and Death Race 2000. Call me crazy.
That's right. Exactly. I completely agree with Barry. I think these movies, you know, don't, you know, the reason why these movies are bulletproof are because the writing is just so good. Mm. It's, they don't pull any punches. But the thing is, they take life, you know, life lessons, if you want to, you know, paint it with broad strokes, but they're able to do it in a way that entertains both the children and the parents. And so many times now I've been writing reviews for kids' films like Monsters vs. Aliens, which it's top-heavy. It's top-heavy for kids, but, you know, what is there for adults? Nothing. Mm-hmm. And Pixar has just been brilliant in being able to say, you know, let's create great stories. Great stories, period, that everyone can resonate with, and absolutely right. The point's never going to go away, but, you know, Pixar, you know, they just know how to tell a great story.
And I think you can definitely make the case that Up is just pretty much the natural progression from, let's just say, Incredibles to WALL-E. Up makes a lot of logical sense as far as, like, the quality of movie that Pixar's making.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost going the Harry Potter route. As the books go along, they tackle more mature themes.
It was with Monsters, Inc. too. I mean, Monsters, Inc. and Up are very much alike. They're about, you know, single dads or men who always wanted to be parents, basically finding the means to be a parent in a really unlikely circumstance.
Very true.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't feel like I would be turned off by Pixar if they moved in a different direction and tried to make more movies like this. Because even though Finding Nemo is really fun to look at, and adults appreciate that too, but it's just like Incredibles and Finding Nemo, I feel like those are kids' movies. Mm. And
Cars.
Oh, I did not like Cars either. And
oh, God.
How many times have you seen that? Yeah.
Everyone gets a mulligan, and I think that's theirs.
Fair enough. Well, that's all that I want to talk about that, but I also want to tackle The Hangover, because I know you saw this, Chris.
Oh, my God, yeah, I saw it a couple weeks ago.
So I'll let you who have seen it talk about it, because I did not.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, and Ed Helms was on hand afterwards for a Q&A, and a warning note to anybody who's in a Q&A with a, you know, somebody from a movie, it's best to avoid questions which are patently obvious. Like one gentleman who raised her hand and asked Ed Helms, so how hard did Mike Tyson really hit that? His sort of stunned, like, are you serious? And realizing the guy was, had to go into the explanation of movie magic. So all awkwardness aside, the movie was, it's exactly what I needed this year. It's what a lot of people need this year. A good, funny movie that's not Starsky and Hutchian in sort of like the lame sort of Friends humor. And, you know, these are real, you know, ribald and real tasteless jokes wrapped in a very funny story. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Funniest thing I've seen all year.
Wow. You, Ethan?
Me too. I laughed so freaking hard during this movie. Like, you know, you have times when there's in comedies when there's kind of a dead space and you're right. Still like just kind of like laughing. Galifianakis in this movie is such a beast. Like, there was just times just looking at him, I was just like just trying to hold in laughter. He was hilarious. Oh my God.
He's funny. Exactly. He's able to be funny without even saying a word. And I think that's one of the greatest points that Todd Phillips has finally gotten back to, you know, that sort of road trip, old school kind of funny, is that, you know what, it's okay to be a little bit daring and bold and let these guys improvise. And talking with Ed Helms, you realize that a lot of, and I hope I don't, you know, spoiler again for anybody who's listening, but they obviously find a baby. And there's a moment in the film where Zach Galifianakis is taking the baby's arm as he's just sort of sitting at a table, and Zach is having the baby jerk himself off. And the oohs and the ahs and the hollers of Zach and how he's delighted and like, hey, guys, look what I can do. You find out it was completely improvised. Zach told Todd Phillips, he goes, hey, wouldn't it be funny if da-da-da-da-da? And Todd sort of turned to him and go, yeah, you're going to do that. You will do that in the next scene. And he did, and it worked. And it's a great case for why, you know, humor like this can be collaborative.
And that was funny? And not just disgusting?
Oh, it was so funny. It's funnier in the movie.
Okay.
But
it is in the movie.
And there's another scene that was improvised. I just read about this where, you know, the scene where Ed Helms is playing the piano and singing the song?
Yes. Yeah.
I read that between takes, Ed Helms would just get on the piano, like, kill time. And they said, Todd Phillips was like, you're amazing, man. You've got to put this in the movie and stuff. So they, like, sat him down and had him play a song about the movie. It was so good.
And there's actually another improvisation. I won't spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it, but there is a, in the trailer, and I'll talk about it because it's in the trailer, but there's a moment in the trailer where there's a man who's running away in his underwear. Mm-hmm. That scene plays differently when you watch the film. And when you watch it, that part was improvised as well. It's amazing. Some of the best bits of this movie were sort of on the fly, improvised, and not on that page. So it just speaks to what happens when you can get some guys who really know how to bring the funny.
I didn't like this movie as much as you guys did, but I will say this much. The end credits of the movie I thought were the funniest part of the whole movie. That was the one scene where myself and the audience, we all just kind of lost it.
How did they get that past the MPAA? Just
no
one, just say that
joke.
One thing with Galifianakis.
Yeah, seriously, it's pretty, yeah, pretty foul stuff.
Is that all you have to say about it? Really?
That's all I had to say. I was on the fence about it.
I don't want to ruin it for you, Dave or Melissa.
Okay.
No, exactly.
Yeah, you just go run to see this movie.
Small little nuanced little moments. Yeah, you don't want to ruin. But you know, hats off to Phillips finally coming back and finding his muse.
Right on. Okay then. Well, that works. I know your battery's running low, Chris, so I'm going to let you go.
Thank you very much.
But thank you for joining us, sir.
Thank you very much for letting me maybe I'll talk for a little bit. Hopefully I can come back and make some time when I'm not corralling kids.
Absolutely. So now we can go ahead and move on with what else we saw this week. Melissa, I'll let you go first.
All right, thank you. I watched Garden State.
What'd you think?
Had you seen it before?
No, I hadn't, and I really didn't know what it was about. I always saw trailers and thought it looked funny, but I don't know. I had mixed feelings about it. I felt like the end was kind of cheesy, but up until that point, I kind of enjoyed it. It was awkward, but in a kind of intriguing way.
You didn't want them to get together at the end?
No, I did, but it's like, oh, they run off the airplane kind of thing in the airport. It's like, no, just drop that ending. But
I like the movie, but I hate its followers so much.
Oh.
Not even the movie, the followers of Garden State.
Just like one person I won't name names, so I know in real life. I remember I was in class once, and we were asked to talk about our like favorite movies, and he said, "Oh, Garden State. Zach Braff is the most talented person in the history of the universe." I was just like, "Oh,
wow." Okay, I mean, I like the movie. Don't get me wrong, but it definitely has issues as well. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The whole boat.
Sarsgaard's good in it though.
And the big cliff is weird. I saw Borat the whole thing this time.
Yay.
Wasn't as funny because I'd just seen full clips of the certain segments and those were funny, but then when it's in context and you realize it's a whole movie, it's kind of like I don't know. I'm really excited for Bruno though. I hope that it turns out better than this and Ali G.
Yes.
Fair enough.
And I watched almost all of season one of Arrested Development, which I'm very, very much enjoying. Yeah,
good.
I love it.
Glad we could get you hooked into that. That's such a good show.
And then awesome. Drag Me to Hell and Up.
So I guess we'll move to Drag Me to Hell next.
If you like.
Let's.
Well, I know you have a lot to say, so.
Go ahead. Let her rip.
Well, did anybody else see anything?
Should we just come back to it and then wrap it up with that?
All right.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I have a lot to talk about, actually. So
Ethan, go for it, sir.
I got the chance a week ago to finally see Steven Soderbergh's Che.
Great. What'd you think?
Okay, first off, this isn't really related to the movie, but Barry, you said you got a program, right?
Yes.
They promised a program in the paper, and I didn't get one. I felt a little gypped.
That's not cool.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But it's hard to say I loved this movie, but I really appreciated it, and I was really impressed by it. I think the second part two, it's Gorilla, right? That's
yes.
Second part.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of the harder to like because it's so slow. But the more I thought about it, like on the car ride home, the more I thought it was actually the much better film than part one, and it really completes the whole thing very well. And definitely this thing would be in my top 10 of 2008 if I had gotten the chance to see it at the time. But the one other thing, though, I thought it was a little weird when Fidel Castro sent Che back in time to impregnate his mom. That was just a little weird.
Wow. Well played, sir. Well played.
Nice.
Call back to the Terminator. Well done, sir.
Ethan, did you recognize Benicio at the beginning of part two? I didn't even know that was him in disguise until he started to take his disguise off.
Well, I was kind of figuring. Yeah, I was like, is that him? And then I was like, towards the end, I was like, oh, that has to be him. But I was just thinking, he's in the Three Stooges movie, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't his character like supposed to look like that or something?
Oh, yeah.
Have like similar hair. So just thinking, wow, hey.
Yeah, he's trying out for this Three Stooges movie.
In Che, of all things.
In Che, yeah.
All right, then. What else did you see, sir?
In honor of The Hangover, I rewatched Old School.
Ah.
I hate Luke Wilson. That's all I have to say.
Fair enough.
Also, I watched Tony Scott's Domino.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I kind of liked it actually. Yeah. I think with this and Speed Racer, I'm officially a defender of movies that give people seizures. But
fair enough.
I kind of fell asleep towards the end. Like I think I fell asleep around when Tom Waits' character came in, and I woke up and stuff was blowing up. So I was like, whoa, what happened? But it was interesting, and I don't know. Like I think Richard Kelly wrote the script, and it's a really interesting screenplay, but I think people would have liked it more because the script itself is very abrasive, and Tony Scott's style is extremely abrasive.
Yeah.
And probably if the movie overall was a little less obnoxious and a little more reined in, I think people would like it more and see its actual really good qualities. But yeah, I'm glad I watched it. I also watched The Dirty Dozen.
Oh, great.
Nice.
Lee Marvin.
Such an entertaining movie.
Yeah.
Also, isn't there a... I was just reading it was like a remake in the works, right? But I guess when you think about it, this movie is pretty much remake-proof right now because if they were going to remake it, they'd have to update it. And the only real thing you could like have it center around is the current Middle East conflict, right?
Yeah.
But... Those kind of movies aren't really doing well. So, what studio would want to greenlight that?
Yeah, it might be a few years of they'll like fictionalize it and make it some fictional war, or they'll like you know they could like the do like G.I. Joe or Mask, you know,
or do it in space.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
and that's it.
Okay, all right. I will go next. I will let Barry wrap it up. If I could just pull up my list, I saw Up. Amazing movie, best movie I saw of the year.
Better than movie. Star Trek, Dave?
It is.
I agree.
I love Star Trek. Although Star Trek is kicking everyone's butt right now at the box office. It's at like $222 million or something.
Fantastic.
Like that. Just Yay. Basically, yes. I watched Panic Room, which I'd never seen before. Holy crap, that movie was awesome.
Yeah.
I don't want to say a whole lot more because we're going to be covering that movie when we get to David Fincher. But yeah, I took my mom to our local DVD superstore, Entertain Mart.
Ah, yes.
And she found it in the 3-for-9 bin.
Oh, great.
And I was like, hey, I've never seen that. And she like, I found her a sealed copy for $3. And she was like, here, you're taking this home and watching it. And thank you, Mom.
Thanks, Mom. Cool.
Now, there's to every good side, there's a bad side. As people who have always, you know, we're always recommending movies to people, sometimes we have to take recommendations back because a movie really connects with someone, they really enjoy it. I want you to watch this. I think you're going to like it. What was that movie? August Rush.
Mm.
Oh my gosh. Wow, hang on. I need to get the bleep button ready. By the time that the credits actually roll, because you know the opening part, like at the little kid's school, the boys' school?
I haven't seen it, Dave.
You haven't?
No.
It opens with like him being in a boys' school that's like out of something from the 30s. You know, like he's getting bullied because he thinks his parents are alive, blah, blah, blah. And your parents are dead. And all this just really stupid stuff. I was like in bed watching on a portable DVD player. I was like, this is the most retarded movie I've seen in my life already. I hated this movie. I know people like this movie a lot. And it's kind of a guilty pleasure. I can see it in that sense, but oh my gosh, that movie drove me up the wall.
Do we know people who like this movie? I don't.
I'm not going to name names, but someone who runs a podcast listed as one of their favorite movies on Facebook. So,
oh no,
not going to say who.
You're going to tell me after when we go to break, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Because I want to know. Oh, that movie just drove me up the freaking wall.
The trailer with Robin Williams as the street musician, that was all I needed to know not to see it. I like Robin Williams, too, but this is...
I hate him.
You know, like, the fact that he isn't in prison for child endangerment, like his character in this movie, that just... I mean, there's certain things you just... there's a certain suspension of disbelief when you see any movie. Sometimes you just can't get around it. And this was one of those cases.
And Kerry Russell was in it, right?
Yeah. Hmm. Sure. Why not? And then I saw two more things. One I'd seen before and one I hadn't. The one I hadn't was Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon. That was such a good movie.
Love that movie.
have you seen it, Ethan?
No.
Oh, you need to. It's on Netflix. Watch it now. So you need to see
you
it.
You and Josh will love it. Yeah, it is. I'd say it is, you know, everything that Scream was. It really is, you know.
But more intelligent.
Arguably so.
Essentially, I will set it up and I won't give anything away, but essentially this guy wants to become a serial killer. So he invites this journalism student who just finished college or whatever to come with a documentary crew and go into what the behind the scenes is to set up for the whole killing spree and all this stuff, and take some awesome turns that I figured out probably about less than halfway through it, but it's still, the execution was so good, it was more than forgivable.
Execution. Good word, Dave.
No kidding. Yeah. Especially around the Virgin. That's all I'm going to say. That was, I couldn't stop laughing when that whole thing happened. And then finally, I rewatched it's a religious film, so oh well. But I watched The Second Chance again, and
it's a great movie.
I love that movie. It is. It's great. So good. Yeah. If you ever want to know what like a good Christian movie could be, as opposed to Left Behind, this is a good one. It has honest insight and such.
This is the one.
It is.
Well, yeah.
I mean,
well,
I know
at go ahead. The theater in town, they're having a God Rocks kids concert. So,
is Faith Plus One going to be there?
I hope so.
Because I forgot, I also watched South Park. I watched the Faith Plus One episode, the Christian Rock episode, and the Mormonism episode.
Good episodes.
Dum, 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 dum. Mm. Yeah. So that was it. It was fairly busy, and I'm going to be watching a whole bunch of crap this week because I've got 3 days off. Yes.
Nice.
Barry, what did you watch?
Let's see. I went back and watched Congo because I love me some silly jungle, ooga mooga, gorilla action, Michael Crichton, silliness. Love Congo.
And Tim Curry.
Yeah, and Tim.
And Bruce Campbell.
Tim Curry and Ernie Hudson in a game of dueling accents. Good stuff. Went back and watched T2. Still the greatest action, one of the greatest action movies of all time. Love T2. Julia had never seen Weird Science, which I subjected her to, and she thoroughly enjoyed it. And then the one I made her watch Escape from New York. She still likes LA better, but Escape from New York, we both enjoyed that one.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've seen it. And the one that I, you know how we're always talking about TV shows, we went back and watched. I've been watching Elvira's Movie Macabre. Ever since I found that Elvira is, you know, a local girl, I've been going back and watching episodes, fun stuff. I saw Night of the Museum 2 last night.
I'm so sorry. Now, yeah. Was this on purpose?
Kind of. It was at the drive-in, and it was a double feature with Land of the Lost, which I liked. But, yeah, Night of the Museum 2 was pretty painful.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the one that was really, really terrible, starring Canada's own Joshua Jackson, Cruel Intentions.
Yay!
We went back and watched Cruel Intentions, which is even worse.
They show that at the festival every year.
The Joshua Jackson Festival.
Yeah, that's it for me.
Wow, okay. So shall we tackle...
Drag me to hell.
Drag me to Hades. Yes. So I... Ethan, did you see it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's right. You did your double feature with Up.
Yeah,
my bad.
Yeah.
I'm going to let you open it up because I think you're going to be the most positive of the reviews. So, and I'm seeing it this week, so I'll have a report next week.
Okay, just disclaimer first. Why there's suddenly a lot of noise around me? So I was just letting my dog out. Anyway,
at least you weren't in the bathroom. That's all that, you know.
Yeah,
doing naked dive.
This movie was so satisfying. Like I just, as sick as this sounds, considering the movie itself, I just had a smile on my face the entire time. Just watching a director I loved so much at the absolute top of his game, doing everything that he does great so well, just. It was like, oh, like I'm trying to just think of specific scenes here. But well, I guess the ending, that ending was just so good. Oh, my God. And just
I wish you were sitting in the room right now, sir. I'm just telling you.
And the shed scene, pure Evil Dead. It was just like, yes. I'm like, after this, you know, I totally agree with Devin Faraci. From Chud.com, who said, this is Evil Dead 4. So, yeah, I enjoyed this movie immensely.
Okay. Barry, I think you're kind of the closest to a middle of the road.
Yeah, middle of the road. I was disappointed. It's not that the movie doesn't try to absolutely please the Evil Dead fans. For me, it tried too hard. I thought it was very heavy-handed. Some of it was a lot of fun. I thought some of it was just disgusting, just to be disgusting. I thought
it was Evil Dead.
Yeah, but Evil Dead was for me, you know, I think I would have liked Drag Me to Hell if it cost like half as much money. For me, it was just trying too hard to be like Evil Dead. There are parts of it I thought were wonderful. I don't know if I needed, The scene with the embalming fluid was disgusting.
Oh, I love that.
I didn't care about the people on. I really didn't care about Alison Lohman's character. She's a good sport, no question. But I thought her and Justin Long were really, really blonde. And bland. Excuse me, bland, not blonde. Bland. Sorry, I'm not making a blonde joke.
Well, she is blonde, but
yeah. She is. But I just didn't care about them enough. Towards the end of the movie, she was trying to make her kind of like an Ash character, and she even has a few choice Ash lines. But I kind of walked away very disappointed. Not because Sam Raimi wasn't trying his hardest, but for me, this was kind of like Tim Burton's Sleepy Hollow. It's a director who was really trying to give his audiences exactly what they wanted, and for me, I could see the sweat too much. It just seems like they were trying way too hard with this movie. So.
And our distinctly negative opinion
there. Well, I agree with you, Barry. I felt like Evil Dead and stuff is great because it's cheesy enough to be disgusting.
Yeah.
This was just plain disgusting.
It was slick.
I felt like the effects were really good, and even though I wasn't completely disgusted by it, yeah, the whole embalming thing was just, I seriously almost gagged with that, but I mean, the whole anvil dropping eyes popping thing, that was silly. Actually, I thought that was funny, because you know that stuff never really happens, and who hangs an anvil in their, you know, garage outside? I don't know, I just felt like, yeah, you don't care about the characters, she's perfect, there's absolutely no fuel to hate this girl and no fuel to root for her I want her to go to hell. She's everything, has everything going for her. She has a good relationship. She's about to get promoted. She's perfect. She looks perfect in every scene. She has a really cute house. She's all dressed cute all the time. It was just like, I liked her and wanted to see her be redeemed. And it was like, at the end, she goes and buys that coat, and being a female, it was like, oh, everything's going to be fine. I mean, you know, you know what's going to happen. But just, I actually pretty much started crying at the end.
Wow.
Because, well, I don't know what I'm going to give away. But not like Up at all. The only thing I liked was the wardrobe and the set. I really liked her house. And I don't know. I was definitely freaked out by the old lady, her whole tapping thing, and
then
the whole seance scene at the end. Those two things definitely scared me. But I just felt I'm not a fan of Sam Raimi necessarily. I'm not that familiar with his work. So being a newcomer person, if I had no idea what this is, that was just. It was seriously so not redeeming for me as an audience member.
Mm. Yeah. You definitely should have only watched clips.
Wow.
Well, I saw the whole thing.
Let me throw this out. Something about the movie that made me very angry that has nothing at all to do with Sam Raimi. The PG-13 rating is officially a joke. Officially a joke. This movie is a hard R. Hard R. This is not a PG-13.
How's this thing rated the same as like the first Spider-Man, just for example?
No joke.
And I was, the thing is, when the lights went up, I realized there was like a dad there with his like 9 or 10 year old kid. I was like, what the?
Yeah, we almost
this poor kid. Like, I was scared by this movie, and I don't get scared by any horror movies. Like, what's running through this kid's mind?
Mm-hmm. It's a seriously scary film, and for Pete's sake, David Paymer is doused with blood at one point. I mean,
did I get any in my mouth? Did I get any in my mouth?
It is such a gory, disgusting movie. I mean, that's not even a criticism. That's the fact. It's a really, really gross movie. PG-13. I mean, the one that, you know, a movie that I actually liked a little bit better that Josh told me to watch, that honestly I would compare it in terms of it trying to be an old school throwback horror movie, Dead Silence. That movie is tamer, and that's an R.
That's very true.
Dead Silence, I think, honestly, you know, and I'm trying to be nice, because for me, I didn't think Drag Me to Hell was terrible, but for me, Dead Silence had more class and was a little more tasteful than Drag Me to Hell. And Drag Me to Hell is PG-13, but Dead Silence is a hard R. I think they should swap those, to tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that I noticed that bothered me was I felt like Christine, her character, had absolutely no transformation, and she just all of a sudden turned into this hardcore bitch at the end. It was like,
actually, sorry,
go ahead.
I thought
there was actually interesting kind of Republican subtext to this movie. this is going to sound weird, but notice how, like, Justin Long's character, they go to the what should I call this guy? I guess the
yuppie the guy, wasp.
No, the guy who tells the fortune teller. Christ,
oh, yeah, the medium.
And he's like, God, so stupid. I'd be a hypocrite if I was doing this to my students, right? And it turns out he's completely wrong. Then Al Solomon's character is like this, you know, vegetarian, and she, well, I won't spoil anything, but she does something. So it's like, it's these people like going against their like more liberal beliefs to conservative ideas to basically just to protect themselves, you know? And I found her character transformation really interesting. And I think she pulled it off. And I thought that scene in the graveyard was the best scene in the movie. And it summed up like just everything, I thought. So, yeah.
That's a very good point, Ethan, because that was a subtext I think the movie is trying to honestly ask the question. And it's a good question. Does this girl deserve to go to hell because of all the things, all the compromises she makes once she's cursed? She does some heinous, heinous stuff in order to get out of her predicament. So I think that is the question. But I think the other question, too, is does the audience deserve to go to hell with her? All the stuff that we have to watch happen is so disgusting. But
I don't know. I just feel like at the beginning she just seems so innocent and she's so cute and I really liked her and I felt like her performance was actually great for what this movie was.
Yeah.
But I loved the whole graveyard scene. I was like, yes, she's a badass. But then it just wasn't. You're rooting for her to win, and I mean, you can see how that scene was flawed and how she gets screwed again with that, but it's just so disappointing to see her never win, which I understand is the point of the movie. But she just seemed too goody two shoes, and a girl like that, I think if she was cursed to be dragged to hell, I don't think she would transform into that. If she was someone stronger in the beginning, I didn't feel like it was believable, and she just all of a sudden like did all these crazy things.
Okay. Fair enough. Did you have anything else to bring up about it, or?
I don't know. I guess the closest thing to a transformation for her would be what happened with the cat.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, what is the message of this movie? Like, bad things happen to good people? Because that's what I felt like it was trying to tell me the whole time. Like, because I just felt like so strongly that her character was good, innately good, and she tried to make the right decision, and her boss even said, you made the right decision with the lady at the bank, and she still gets screwed. So
I think Ethan is probably right about the point of the movie, which is, I think this is about people who are learning to believe, you know, to take faith in the things that they're just kind of laughing off. I mean, she, you know, I mean, the thing that pushes the movie in motion is that she ultimately compromises herself in order to move ahead in the world. And that's the first thing she does that's wrong. Mm-hmm. And throughout the course of the movie, she's trying to basically get herself out of this predicament by doing things that are heinous and terrible. And she continually, you know, is walking down this terrible path. So it's like basically these people are learning to not necessarily embrace, but be aware of the supernatural, the things that they would normally laugh off. I mean, even towards the end of the movie, Justin Long's character is starting to, you know, take faith in this stuff. So I think, you know, if you're looking for a point, I think it's there. I mean, but, you know, I think even Raimi would admit this movie is kind of, you know, it's an exercise in style.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, shall we move on to what else came out this week? I think we've only got two other movies, so.
Well, let's see. In theaters this week, Land of the Lost, which didn't do very well over the weekend. I like this movie. This is Will Ferrell and Dan McBride. The aforementioned The Hangover, which did great over the weekend. Next to Up, it did like $43 million.
Yeah.
Very good opening. The Return of Nir Vardalos, The Return Nobody Wanted. My Life in
Winnipeg.
My Life in Ruins, Nir Vardalos and Richard Dreyfuss. Somebody needs to give Richard Dreyfuss a good movie. And in limited release, Away We Go, the new film from Sam Mendes with Maya Rudolph and John Krasinski.
Yay.
Cool. So you liked Land of the Lost, but you said this was kind of another joke of a PG-13.
Yeah. Well, you know, the critics who really, really, really hated this movie, the one thing they're all saying is that this is not a children's film. They were offended that, you know, this movie has F-bombs. It's really raunchy with a lot of sex jokes. I like the movie for that reason. For me, this is like one of those cheesy 90s live-action Flintstones movies that Will Ferrell and Danny McBride came in and crashed. And that's,
okay.
And that's why I liked it. For me, that's, you know, and I like those guys, and I think the movie works in that way. For me, it was a lot of fun. I thought it was absolutely hilarious, but it is absolutely not a children's film, and that's how they've been promoting it. So
okay, that works. Yeah. That works. So what DVDs are coming out this week, sir?
This week in DVD, don't screw with Clint Eastwood. Seriously, don't mess with Clint Eastwood. He's tougher than you are. Clint Eastwood's Gran Torino, the first blockbuster hit of the year, over $140 million. Do not go in that man's lawn.
What was Ethan's title for this movie?
I can't even remember. It's been so long.
It's Get Off My Lawn, the movie.
Get Off My Lawn, the movie.
Oh, yeah. Wait. Sorry, Dave. This is off topic, but you unpaused the show, right? Just to make sure.
Yeah, thanks. Okay. Thanks. I appreciate that.
We are recording. Gran Torino is available in widescreen and Blu-ray. Woodstock, the director's cut. If you remember Woodstock, then you're a liar. You didn't go, because no one who went to Woodstock remembers Woodstock. The director's cut, the 40th anniversary ultimate collector's edition. You can set your DVD on fire and smoke it when you're done. Tom Tickfer's The International, starring Clive Owen and Naomi Watts, supposed to have like one of the best shootouts ever, available in regular and Blu-ray. Crossing Over, Harrison Ford, Ray Liotta, Ashley Judd, and Jim Sturgess in the little scene, wannabe traffic, crossing over. Fired Up, guilty pleasure. I like this movie. It opened on my birthday. Available in unrated and regular and Blu-ray. This is the one about the horny jocks who sneak into cheerleader camp. Wackiness ensues. Available on Blu-ray. The best film of 2004, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Indecent Proposal, The Siege, and Fatal Attraction.
Is that all you've got for releases for this week? Okay. Just because I love this show, especially when, like, this is, you talk about you like Robin Williams occasionally. When he was on Whose Line Is It Anyway, that's some of the best TV of all time.
It's great.
So I don't know if he's on this release, but there's the best of Whose Line Is It Anyway, and it is the new version. And hey, it's got Colin Mochrie and Ryan Stiles. So
yeah, if it's the best of, they should have that Williams Club.
I hope so. Because that is when he's doing, or when they have Richard Simmons on.
That's right.
Too. Yeah. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I love that show.
I'll be the props. And they're leaving alone. Okay. Let's move on to news. I have one piece of news I'm going to save for the end because it's going to take 10 minutes to go through. So, anyone else want to go?
David.
I will.
You go. I'll let Melissa kick the last, the big one of the week
off. We can't see you, Ethan. It's hard. David Carradine was found dead in his hotel room in Bangkok. He was 72, and that is still being investigated.
So we're not going to go into all the what it could be.
Let's just talk about Carradine for a second. We're talking about Bill. We're talking about Kill Bill. We're talking about the star of Death Race 2000. We're talking about the star of Kung Fu the series. He's been in everything from Evil Toons. This guy's resume goes on and on and on. I think he did over 100 movies.
Wow.
I mean, he truly will be missed. He is one of the absolute staples, not only of B-film, but of cinema.
Oh, and he's a famous comic book collector, too. I remember he has Batman number one.
Wow.
Dang. Okay. Dang.
Yeah, Carradine was a super cool guy. He was he was part of the Carradine family, including John Carradine, Robert Carradine, Keith Carradine. True showbiz legend. I would arguably say that his best performance was in Kill Bill Volume 2. I thought he was fantastic in that film.
Yeah, absolutely
he will truly be missed.
Indeed.
And he was actually in Bangkok about to start filming something.
That's right, yeah. He was making a film.
I don't know what it was, but...
Yeah. Did anyone see him as Poondong in Crank 2?
No, I didn't see Crank 2.
Not yet. No, not yet. I probably will end up seeing Crank 2 out of pure morbid curiosity, so I'll get to see that final performance. Wow. All right. Barry, have you got any news at all? Or?
None.
Okay. Well, I'll let you do your last one, and then we'll let Ethan take over the show.
Yeah.
For you gamers out there, the highly anticipated Sims 3 came out this week. Haven't played it. Can't wait. Unstoppable is a new movie about a runaway train, and Chris Pine is supposed to star in it, and Tony Scott is directing it.
Tony Scott. It's going to be on a train, and the camera is not going to stand still, and it's going to be a lot of shaky shakes, a lot of loud music, and it's going to be bleached out colors. Cool.
Sounds like a good time.
It's nice. Monique.
Yeah. All right, Ethan, I'll let you spout out everything you got, sir.
Okay.
Deep
well,
breath.
The
Deep
breath. Trailer. I think I'll do the McConaughey voice for this. Okay.
Try out your McConaughey voice. Let's hear this.
All right. Just think I'll take my shirt off. And away. Okay, I'm not doing this. The trailer for Screen Geek's most anticipated movie of the year, Twilight New Moon, came out.
Oh my gosh. I forgot that trailer came out.
The trailer was hysterical.
My personal favorite part of this trailer is when the girl, Belladonna, she's the porn star. She's about to be eaten by Blackula, and she's like, oh, help me. And then the Jacob or whatever comes out, he's shirtless. And then he runs at her. But what I notice when he's running at her, he's clothed. So it's like, yeah, I'll save you. Just let me take some time to put on some clothes first, you know?
Here's the best thing I love about that. When he got on the rock and had his hero pose, he reminded me of Rufio. I have no idea why, but he did.
Oh, and he turns into a dog in midair. That was awesome.
Yeah.
A fluffy, cute dog, I might add.
Paper
this
cut.
Looks so bad. Oh, the paper cut. Really? Here, first of all, how do you get a paper cut from a cake? And I'm just asking.
How does it, like, she's just, like, bleeding? I've never got a paper cut like that in my life.
Wait, how does it show it in the trailer?
Yeah, she gets a paper cut, and, like, how does she get it?
Well, in the book, she gets it from opening a present because it's her birthday,
yeah.
And she slides the paper.
Somehow she got a paper cut from the cake.
Was it, like, sandpaper? Well, like, holy crap, man. Like, what do they wrap that thing in?
No, that's an error.
Wait, they wrap it in sparkles.
sharp sparkles.
That's right.
Oh, that just that trailer, dude. Oh, I'd immediately follow it with the College Humor clip. I don't know why. I'm
so glad you mentioned that. Yeah, College Humor and the name of the clip on collegehumor.com is a deleted Twilight sex scene. Because if you listen to our last week's show where Dave is like, oh, did you guys see the Twilight butt sex clip? And this like silence on like, what are you talking about, Dave? But once the show was over, you showed us the clip and it's one of the funniest things.
It's a deleted scene about, so Edward funny. Trying to get some butt sex.
Yes. Yeah, you gotta see the clip.
Which just gave us an explicit tag for saying that like twice from the past 10 seconds. But yeah, nice. Yeah, that movie looks so awful. Yeah. Awful.
Looks
but
more of the same.
I, in a way, I'm going to have to go see it so I can laugh and have all the Twilight fangirls be mad at me.
Well, I got
to
know if it's better than the first one, you know, because it's a different director now. This is the director of The Golden Compass.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I want to know.
All right. Well, I'll let you move on, Ethan. That one was gold. Thank you, sir.
Okay. It looks like Universal Pictures, the theme park or the studio, I'm not sure, has a Where's Waldo feature film in development.
I saw that.
I read that it was happening, and I just don't want to know how that
works. Do you have to look for him in every scene? Do you find him at the end?
Is he like the 3 Men and a Baby ghost? We're supposed to like look for him. That's weird.
I honestly think a Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego movie would be better.
I told Hell, there's a plot yeah. there. It's an action movie. Yeah, Where's Waldo? What is that? A comedy or
man? The Hangover was like Where's Waldo.
Yeah, there you go. Actually, that. That's very fitting. That's like an R-rated Where's Waldo with Mike Tyson.
Yeah. Okay. And Zach Galifianakis is... okay, I won't say on air.
Okay, I appreciate that, sir. Yes. I just don't... I'm trying to wrap my head around even a funny way to try to do this, but this is something I expect from, you know, from The Asylum, you know, makers of Transmorphers 2, Fall of Man.
Aren't there better children's books? Like where's the Bernstein Bears movie, you know, or... You know, or Peter Cottontail, but where's Waldo? That
well, they are making Where the Wild Things Are.
Yeah,
yes, but that looks good.
Exactly.
And there's a story there. You know, it's not a picture book.
It's going to be animated, right, Ethan?
I didn't read that, but wait, was there another like children's book series where it's like you had to find something? It wouldn't be like Waldo, but it would have like a picture of like a bunch of random like just items.
I Spy. Did you read those books? Yeah, those were awesome.
Are we talking about those books like in Mallrats where you have to look at it for a long time until you see something?
Goddamn sailboat, yeah.
See, my concern is that they're going to make... I'm not going to say that. Never mind. Okay.
Moral of the story, where's Waldo the movie? It's not going to be good.
Thank you for saving me from saying that on there. Okay. What else have you got, sir?
It has been reported that James Cameron's Avatar will have a running time of 189 minutes.
Wow.
How is this a major news story for the week? That's my real question.
Well, man. Because 3D and that long, like even towards up the end of Up, I was starting to develop like a very slight headache.
Oh, were you?
So I'm like, yeah, like 3 hours of this. I'm like,
that is a long time. Yeah. Is that, I don't know, is that shorter or longer than Titanic?
I think it's a little shorter, like probably like 5 minutes shorter okay. or something.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Wow. I don't know. I mean, maybe it'll be, I mean, for Pete's sake, I thought The Dark Knight was too long, but everyone tells me like, no, The Dark Knight was long enough. So maybe this will be, you know, a lot of a really good thing or too much of a good thing.
All right. Okay.
Maybe, you know, maybe we'll know more once we see a trailer. I mean, for Pete's sake, we've been looking at concept art.
We've seen the power loader.
Yeah, for Pete's sake. I mean, like, we have no concept of what this movie is going to be like visually. All we've seen are pictures. So maybe the trailer.
Well, Transformers 2 is 151 minutes long. So.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Kill me now.
Mm. Oh, dude.
Drag me to hell. My gosh, man. Because, you know, the only reason I'm seeing Transformers 2, one, because one of my students loves Transformers, and I promised her and her boyfriend I would go see her, see the movie with her. And the other reason is because it's supposed to have the Avatar trailer. So that's the only reason I'm excited to see Revenge of the Fallen.
All right. Well, now that we've done that complete buzzkill, tell me you have something to bring us up, sir.
Okay, this is a good one. Jack Nicholson has picked his next project. He'll be starring in James L. Brooks' next film as Paul Rudd's father.
Oh, wow.
I can see that being really funny.
Yeah.
Well, Brooks is one of the geniuses of movie comedy, so yeah, definitely excited about that one.
Cool.
It's a nice project for Jack.
No, yeah. Love Uncle Jack. Keep him working.
Crazy, senile, insane Uncle Jack.
Into the Wild and Speed Racer star Emile Hirsch will be starring in a modernized version of Hamlet to be directed by Twilight director Catherine Hardwicke.
Isn't that sad that now she's known as being the Twilight director forever now?
She's the director of 13, for Pete's sake. Yeah, but no.
That's interesting.
I was going to mention that, but I thought you guys would be like, so, you know.
No, I like her. I liked her first two movies. I just kind of disappointed about that last one she did.
If only they would adapt Hamlet 2, then I'd be, never mind.
Well, this is supposed to be a modernized Hamlet. You know, it's like they've already done that. They did that 10 years ago with Ethan Hawke. Yeah, yeah. It was very good. They don't need to do it again.
Maybe, well, you know, there's always room for another revival of Shakespeare. That's pretty much what people think.
It's true. Is. But it's always concept Shakespeare. It's never Shakespeare straight up. I mean, it's never a bunch of guys in tights talking in iambic pentameter. It's always, you know, Hamlet in New York or... You know, Macbeth is a Pepsi commercial. You know, it's never like straightforward.
You had to bring up they commercials, really didn't you? Did anyone see that special Bud Light commercial?
Which one?
The guy who's buying an adult magazine with his Bud Light.
Don't think I did.
No, I didn't see that either.
It's never making it on air. Never, ever, ever. I'll show you after the show. But okay. It's like 2.5 minutes. It is hilarious, but it's hilariously wrong.
Bud Light commercials are always hilarious. Didn't they do the frogs?
I swear Budweiser's got the best writers. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, Bud Light, same company. So yeah. Yeah, I'll get the link out and everyone. It's very adult in nature, but dang, it's funny. Okay, sorry. Ethan, back to you, sir.
And our last story of the day, the 9-year-old actress who starred in Slumdog Millionaire is, I believe, young Latika, will be writing a memoir about her experiences in life.
Okay.
I hate these books. Like, it's like when Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen like wrote their memoirs like while they were doing Full House. I hate these stupid books. Like, wait till they're older and they've got like some perspective on these experiences. It's so stupid.
Do you think she's... I don't want to sound rude here, but do you think she's literate?
That's a very good question. Because there was that story a couple years back where that American Idol winner was illiterate, but she wrote like her life story.
Ghostwriter.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
then.
Have you cracked open Miles to Go? There's like the first 10 pages are her talking about how she's left-handed, and it's all in her handwriting.
For who?
Miley Cyrus.
Okay. Wow.
Hmm. Yeah, see, like Miley Cyrus, I want to read her life story when she's 40. You know, not right now.
Yeah. Actually, she's gone through her Lindsay Lohan stage. Is that what you're saying?
Well, like when she's had more, you know, when more things have happened to her. I mean, maybe she'll, for all we know, she's going to like become either a total wreck or this incredible actress or someone who's actually going to like have a real career as a country singer. You know, I mean, yeah, she could have like a really incredible life.
I think she has potential.
Yeah. I mean, right now, I mean, what are we going to hear? Like, LOL, the Jonas Brothers are so cute. The movie did really well. Oh, my God. My doll looks just like me. I mean,
so are you saying just follow her on Twitter instead?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Save your, what, $29.95? It's a big hardcover book,
right? Yeah,
it's
expensive, too. I actually looked at it.
Well, that's how I plan to have my memoir. I'm just going to take all my Twitter posts and put them together.
That should be entertaining.
Well, I mean, it worked for Kevin Smith. I mean, his book was, you know.
I actually read that book.
It was a great book, too. It was very engaging.
Well, the drug story was interesting.
Yeah, that was great. I love all this stuff about working on Die Hard. And yeah, I enjoyed his blog book.
Okay. So you're done with your news, sir?
Yeah.
All right. I have my only piece of news, you know, because we started the show with Ink. An hour ago. Good night. The show's going forever.
It's an epic show.
It is. But we've got to put it in here. I got to sit down over Skype with Jamin Winans, the director of Ink, and talk about how things have been going and where the show's going, and asked him about composing the music for the film and all that kind of fun stuff. So I'm going to go ahead and play that now. It's about 10 minutes, and then I'll just put it straight into a break, and we'll come back and talk about the Hudsucker Proxy.
Okay.
Hey, this is Dave. I'm here sitting down via Skype with Jamin Winans, director, editor, writer, composer. Is there anything else I'm missing of Ink?
Yeah, I think you just about got it. I think we're good.
So we haven't talked to you for a few months, and you guys have expanded.
Yeah, we have. Yeah, we, I guess, last time we talked, we were at Starfest in Denver, and so I guess right around that time, we were just playing in Denver, and so since then, I guess we've opened in Fort Collins, up north in Greeley, and then now we're heading to L.A., and then it's New York and Portland after that.
Very
so
cool.
We're basically like a rock band going on tour.
So are you going to do Q&As at all these screenings too?
That's a plan. That's a plan. You know, of course, if we're sober enough and, you know, people can get us out of our trailer, then we'll do it.
So you're really taking the rock star mentality.
Yes, that's right. We figure we got to start early, become prima donnas the best we can. Of course, we don't have the rock star budget, so I don't know how we're gonna, you know, work that out.
Well, to be fair, with how great Ink looks, I don't think you've proven that you can stretch the dollar very far. I'll put it that way.
That's right. Right. We can be the wizard behind the curtain. We can pretend like we're rock stars and really put on a good show.
Well, before we get into everything that's going on, where you're going and all that fun stuff, I have to ask you about the score for Ink.
Sure, yeah.
Because I just bought the soundtrack this week.
Oh, awesome. Well, thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you for your support.
Absolutely, absolutely. You can get it over at Amazon.com. It's just strictly there through the MP3 download right now, right?
It's there. It's actually on iTunes as well, and a few other places, but those are the big ones.
Cool. So I have to ask, I mean, since you wrote it, you directed it, you edited it, and you also composed the music. Was it good having that much control, or was it kind of a lot to take in at once?
It's sort of a bittersweet thing. I mean, it's really nice on, you know, an artistic level, because it really does, you know, I don't have anybody, you know, barking over my shoulder, telling me what to do, and you know, that's nice, and I really can kind of do whatever I want to do. But the hard part is when you do everything, then making a movie takes a whole lot longer. So, and it wears you out for sure. But it was, for the most part, you know, I'd like to keep on doing all those jobs no matter what the budget is. I think it would certainly help if we were getting paid something in the future. So, you know, if in the next film, if, you know, we're sitting in the south of France, you know, editing the film, that would be just fine. But yeah, for the most part, it's really rewarding being able to work on both the sound and, or sorry, the music and the editing simultaneously, because, you know, I really like to work to music. And so being able to bounce back and forth between the two is really a kind of a luxury. And it's those two aspects of filmmaking are really the parts I like the most. I enjoy editing a lot, because you're really seeing all the elements come together, and enjoyed the music part of it a lot, just because I don't really consider myself much of a musician, so I actually don't take it that seriously. And so I actually enjoy doing it. I think anytime I actually can, you know, try to be a real musician, then I'm going to start hating the process. So it's always what happens when you make your hobbies your profession, and you know, it stops being fun.
Totally. Well, I have to admit, I mean, not that writing music is easy in the first place, but being that close to the material, being with every facet of it, what did that make it a bit easier being able to compose for it?
You know, it does for me. You know, for years I've worked with composers, and for the most part I've had good experiences, but one of the hardest things is to try to communicate an emotional musical value to somebody. And a lot of times it's easiest just to fiddle with the piano yourself and just kind of find it yourself. And that's, it's really hard on musicians to sit there and you know, breathe down their neck as they're trying to figure out, you know, how to put music to your movie. So I've just found it's easier just to do it myself.
Very cool.
Right. And it's a lot cheaper that way.
Well, there is that. It just makes life easier for you just in general.
Yes. I conveniently leave that part out, and that's the truth of the matter. So, you know, how many musicians will you find that'll work for free, you know?
So I have to ask, have you found that the buzz is starting to build with Ink?
It does, over the past couple months? Yeah, it does. You know, it was interesting. It started in Denver. Well, actually, to be precise, I guess it started in Santa Barbara, and we got a little bit of buzz there where we opened the film. But then Denver's been great. I mean, it just kept on playing in Denver 8 weeks. And so we just kind of keep on branching out from Denver. And it just, you know, our mailing list, our Facebook page, our blog, everything just kind of continues to grow. And so the more, sorry, a little beep was my email.
That's okay.
I think the more that, you know, that we branch out to new theaters, just the bigger the audience gets, which is great. I mean, we didn't really know how much it would branch out from Denver just because, you know, Denver is our home base, and so we have a lot of friends and family and everything here. So we knew it would at least do moderately well here, but to see it, you know, doing well other places is great. So hopefully that just continues.
Cool. Right on. Now, so the next stop after the Greeley run is you're going out to L.A. to a rather historic theater.
Right. Theater. I like the way you put that.
It is. It's a classic movie house. The Egyptian. I mean, it goes back to the 1920s or something.
Oh, it's amazing. We were talking earlier. I used to, because I went to film school in Hollywood, and I used to walk by the Egyptian all the time. And I mean, it blows our minds to know that we're going to be playing there. I mean, it's kind of a dream come true to be right on Hollywood Boulevard. And the Egyptian, you know, for people who don't know, it's, you know, they premiered Citizen Kane there, Ben-Hur, I mean, all these classic movies. And I think it's the oldest theater in Hollywood, I think.
I think it's the oldest one that's still, like, functioning, yeah.
Yeah, I guess that'd be the right way to put it. So, yeah, I mean, it's daunting, to say the least. We don't know what we're doing there, but we're excited about it.
And that's just going to be for one night as of right now, right?
That's right. Well, yeah, it's looking that way. I mean, we as of now, we can confirm it's one night. There's a good chance it'll expand from there, but we don't want to say anything yet because right now we just want to get people there that first night because obviously if that goes well, then hopefully we can expand. But if it doesn't go well, then we probably won't expand. So we're just trying to keep everybody focused on that first night, and then we'll kind of see where we're at.
Cool. Now, what night, what time?
Oh, yeah. Details? That's kind of important information.
And, I guess.
Thank you, Dave.
Absolutely. Hey, I'm here for you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So the date is June 10th, and that's Wednesday, June 10th, so it's less than a week away.
Yeah, by the time this airs, it'll be like 2 or 3 days out.
Yeah, okay, so yeah. So, I mean, in a couple days, it's going to be playing. So it's at 7:30, June 10th at the Egyptian. You can get your tickets in advance at Fandango. We definitely recommend that. We don't know if it's going to sell out, but it'd be really unfortunate if you got all the way there and found out that you couldn't get in. So buy tickets in advance for sure.
I've got to imagine you're selling them pretty quick at this point already.
Yeah, we seem to be. Yeah, we don't know what our numbers are. We don't get the numbers from Fandango, but we know a lot of people are buying in advance. So hopefully there will still be tickets left by the time this airs.
Right on. Cool. And then where do you go from there?
Well, then, what we know for sure is we're going to be playing New York, and New York is July 9th, and I think that's Cinema Village in Greenwich Village, I think. Unfortunately, the best thing to do is check our website. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit fuzzy on the details, but
that's okay. And what would that website be?
Oh, thank you again, Dave. Man, you want to be our publicist?
I'm trying.
We're paying a whole lot of nothing right now. The website is doubleedgefilms.com. And you can also look us up on Facebook. Just look for Ink on Facebook. And we have a fan page there. And we also have a blog. And that's doubleedgefilms. So anyhow, well, you can look us up on all those places. We're on Twitter. We're everywhere. So
cool. I'll put links up in the post too. So
that's right. So the film is Ink, and the company is Double Edge Films.
Right on. Cool. Now, are you? Is there any talk about? I have to ask, since you've made Spin as well. Is there any talk about making that like air beforehand, just once in a while for fun? Or
oh, you mean before we play Ink?
Yeah, I'm just curious. Randomly throwing it out there.
No, I like that idea. Actually, we hadn't thought of that, but. No, we should consider doing that because that would be kind of a nice lead-in, I suppose. I don't know. Maybe we'll do that now. Fair and enough. If we do, we'll make sure we give you credit for the idea.
Well, hey, I appreciate that, sir. Well, I know you guys are getting ready to head out of here, so I'm going to let you go. But thank you so much for sitting with me.
Oh, thank you. It's always a pleasure, Dave.
Absolutely. And good luck.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. We'll let you know how it goes.
And I'm sure you're waiting to hear an ad right now, but this show's going too long. We've got too much to get through. We're just going to skip the ad this week. So, but you had an interesting when we were talking about New York. You knew that
the Greenwich Theater. That's a great theater. So that's people, all the bohemians who are out there need to go and see this thing. This is totally the right crowd for that movie.
Well, it's kind of like high concept art house sci-fi, which mm-hmm. is really hard. It can be a hard sell, but it's so good. It's well worth checking out. Mm-hmm. So yeah. But yeah, what are we talking about this week, sir?
The Hudsucker Proxy by the Coen Brothers.
How far was this into their filmography when they made this movie?
Pretty far, because at this point, this was, let's see, Miller's Crossing, Barton Fink, and then Hudsucker. Okay. And Hudsucker is, I mean, you know, it's a big budget Joel Silver movie. Joel Silver produced it. It had one of the biggest budgets of the year, and it certainly was also one of the biggest flops of 1994, unfortunately. Nobody
saw it.
Well, you know, I don't think Paramount knew how to advertise. I mean, in the poster for the movie, they give away, you know, what it is that Tim Robbins invents. That's supposed to be one of the big surprises of the movie. You're supposed to think he's an idiot whenever he's showing people the picture of this thing he invented, the circle. You know, you're supposed to think he's a total moron, but basically, with the trailer and the poster, Warner Brothers said, no, this is what the movie is about. It's about the invention of this. And, you know, kind of kills the element of surprise.
Yeah. It's a bit of a bummer. Ethan, I want to let you start off with what you thought of the Hudsucker Proxy.
Okay. Do you ever get the feeling, you know, when watching a movie, kind of a sinking feeling, knowing that just the movie you're watching just isn't working for you and it probably won't ever do anything to improve? That's kind of the feeling I got watching this movie. I think this movie is kind of a misfire. I think it's just too wacky. There's no... It feels like such a cartoon that I couldn't care about anything that was going on. And yeah, it's a real disappointment, but obviously the Coens, they went on to do better. They did better before. So this is just, you know, just a minor blemish in their filmography, really. So,
interesting.
Yeah.
It's interesting because this is what we were saying about Drag Me to Hell.
And
Drag Me to Hell and Hudsucker were both written by Sam Raimi. Raimi was one of the screenwriters.
Interesting.
Wrote Hudsucker, mm-hmm. Along with the Coen Brothers, yeah. And in the really quick, the second Sam Raimi movie, Crime Wave, the movie that he's disowned that got screwed, there are all these references to Hudsucker Industries in Crime Wave. So like they've been planning this movie far out, the Coens and Sam Raimi.
Interesting. Okay. Well, Melissa, you're the other person who had not watched it before this week. So what did you think about it?
I would say my favorite part of the movie was how the irony of it all. I really appreciated the transformation of his character and how he thought that he wanted to be in this big corporate business and be like all those laughing men in that room, mm-hmm. but he didn't really turn out like that. At first, I felt like he might have been different, but he just fell into the same trap, kind of. And I don't know, you could say it was like a political argument or something. And there was one scene where they're basically showing his transformation from being a blue-collar, you know, mailroom worker.
So the newspapers?
To becoming the president, and it's all done through laughter. He just is laughing the whole time, and I just love that. I just thought that was perfect.
It's one of my favorite Coen films. Yeah. I think, and it's because, like I said, we talked about it on the last episode, I'm more a fan of their comedy and their slapstick than I am of their like the hard-edged noir. So I can totally understand if you're more on the noir end of things of the Coen filmography, I can see not liking Hudsucker overall because it is a very slapstick movie, but I love it.
You know, I showed it to Julia a year ago, my wife, and she agrees with Ethan. She thought it was really over-stylized to the point where there was nothing to really attach to. I love this movie, and I think it's almost the cult of Hudsucker. Because I don't know about you, Dave, but I feel like I discovered this film when it came out. Because I remember when it was in theaters, and USA Today gave it a 3.5 out of 4-star review. They said it was the best supernatural comedy about business since Brazil, which I thought was a very interesting comparison. I freaking love this movie. I love the laughing montage. I love the scene where Tim Robbins gives this really long, dialogue-heavy scene while doing the hula hoop in front of the board. I love that scene. Like, what a tour de force on his part. And I think he did Shawshank and this movie back-to-back.
Which is just crazy.
And there was a really funny interview with Morgan Freeman that year where he said that because, you know, he was he co-starred with Tim Robbins and Shawshank and Tim Robbins and Hudsucker, and he says, like, it's a shame that they both were in two of the best movies of the year. They had the worst titles of the year. He says all throughout the course of the year, people would come up to Morgan Freeman and go, we loved you in the Hudsucker Redemption.
Wow. Okay. Paul Newman is so great as there's no doubt about it. He is a mustache twirling melodramatic villain.
Yeah.
But it works so well in the framework of this film.
Yes.
I loved it. The whole part where he was like the whole part where he gets introduced to Norville Barnes in his office, and the page is getting on fire and blowing out a window, and going back to the flashback about, you know, the stitching and all that stuff. In a way, this is very much a Family Guy episode version of a Coen Brothers film, because there's so many non sequiturs, except it's not all pop culture and it's actually done well. So,
Newman's performance in this movie is kind of like Harrison Ford's performance in Blade Runner. It's so wonderfully detached. He doesn't seem to realize all the incredible things going on around him. He's like, he's so used to and burnt out by this crazy world that he's in that truly, like, an idiot like Tim Robbins' character is the norm for him.
Yeah, and if this movie wasn't so over the top, Jennifer Jason Leigh's character wouldn't have worked out.
Right.
There's no way.
Yeah.
I mean, that was like trying to pull something. That was taking His Girl Friday and amping it up another 3 times.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Next to Kate Blanchett in The Aviator. I mean, this is one of the most overt, impersonations of either Katherine Hepburn or that particular type of 1940s gumshoe mall.
Yeah.
I loved her so much. And after a while, the whole fast-talking thing with her and then her boss, the news guy,
got
a little old, but never with her. I just liked her character, how she was just like the standout woman and not so, I guess, typical for, I don't know if she was typical for the time period, but she was funny.
And Bruce Campbell's candy.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I hated that. And I felt like every scene in the movie was people like, wah, wah, you know, what do I do that? Wah, wah, and doing something wacky and falling over. I'm like, you know, it's funny, but after like the 20th thing, you're like, okay, maybe just take a breather. You know what I mean? And I think towards the end of the movie, it sort of started to, but just not enough to redeem the overall thing for me, to be honest.
Fair enough.
Ethan, did you hate the last part of the movie, the whole bit with
Hudsucker?
Yeah, the whole bit of Tim Robbins' ultimate redemption and the teeth and stopping time. Did that rankle you too?
I actually thought Roger Ebert coming out as the angel was kind of cute. But
wow. I love Bill Cobb.
Yeah.
Now, granted, okay, full disclosure, I love Bill Cobb in this movie, but it also helps that our good friend Nate, who's been on the show a few times, just finished his first major student film. It's called Steadfast, and he got Bill Cobb to be in the film.
Awesome.
And he showed me a trailer last night at the poker game I was at, and I am shocked at how good this thing looks. I'm begging him to get me a trailer that I can post. That's all he's going to ever be able to post is a trailer until it actually gets bought or something like that, but... It rings familiar of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou in many ways.
My quick side about Bill Cobb, I'll just say this really quick, was last night suffering through Night at the Museum 2. I thought it was interesting that he and Dick Van Dyke and Mickey Rooney were in the first one. I thought they definitely stole the first one. But the best thing about the first one, those three were not in the sequel.
Okay.
So
take all the good stuff.
I want to say thank you, Bill Cobb, for not selling out for Night at the Museum too.
Yeah, were you okay with the just outlandish? It was like just how outlandish, like with the teeth. That's all I'm gonna say. Is that kind of like indicative of like what you had problems with it with Ethan?
Yeah, and actually the first scene where I just knew this movie wasn't gonna work for me was when Roger Ebert jumped out the window and like the camera followed him. It just didn't work for me. Yeah, maybe I just need to watch it again, but yeah, and I liked Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, which was pretty silly too, but I don't know.
Because it's funny, because that's the scene that hooked me on the movie. I thought that scene was so freaking awesome when Charles Durning and careens out the window and the whole bit of like getting on the table and you know,
like doing rubbing. The Looney Tunes getting ready to run.
Yeah, getting ready to jump. Yeah, and he's got his stopwatch. I mean, I love it because it's not only is it such a crazy scene, but it's such a sense of discovery. It's one of these movies where anything could happen at any time and does. I love, I think for me, the masterpiece of the movie, it's not my favorite scene in the movie, but I would say it's what makes it, for me, a 4-star movie, is the montage about the birth of the hula hoop.
Yes.
I think it's a genius sequence. The way it was edited, the way it's paced, the way it looks like an old 1950s film you'd see, like, you know, in front of the movie in the cartoon at the theater. I thought it was just total brilliance.
Yeah, I agree, Barry. I loved the scene where he was on the table and jumped out. Yep. I think, Ethan, for you, you obviously didn't go with it. And for me, that was where I decided the film was going to work for me, and I loved it. Hmm. So I think that was just kind of an initial breaking point.
This is definitely a movie where I could never fault someone for not rolling with it, because I have been through so many quote-unquote masterpiece movies that I just couldn't roll with it because that crucial moment, it just didn't click.
Didn't work for you, yeah.
Well, it's so over the top. I mean, a scene that is, I find, very charming because I've seen the film so many times, but even the first time I saw it, like the whole bit... Like, there's a stupid running gag about how Tim Robbins is from Muncie, and he assumes that Jennifer Jason Leigh is going to get that. And so there's that scene where all of a sudden he breaks into this idiotic Muncie song, and she's trying to keep up with him. It's a scene that could have killed most movies, but in this film, it feels completely right tonally. So, you know, either you go with this tone, or you go, it's too over the top. And, you know, in fact, it is too over the top, but for some people it works, other people it's completely a turnoff.
This is also, in my opinion, a crime that it's such a bare-bones DVD release.
Oh, absolutely.
You get a trailer and that's it. Yippee!
The special effects for this film were groundbreaking in 1994. There should at least be something on that. I mean, this is one of the last films that Paul Newman ever did, and he's wonderful in the film. There should be something on that. The commentary would be interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe Warner Brothers doesn't want to pay for a commentary because they're afraid that the Coen brothers are just going to bash them for how they
screwed the movie. Well, they really don't do commentaries either.
Oh, they don't?
They've only done one, and that was on The Man Who Wasn't There. And apparently it was a pretty bad commentary.
That's the only commentary they've done? God, yeah. I wouldn't even listen to that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that will wrap up our Coen Brothers series.
Are there any Coen Brothers movies that we haven't mentioned that we should mention, that people should see, or that we especially hate? I mean, we know everybody...
Intolerable Cruelty is the pile of crap.
Yeah, you and I know. Like, that's our... We hate that one especially, but...
You know, are there any other ones that you didn't particularly like, Ethan?
I wasn't a huge fan of Blood Simple, but I think when I watched it, I wasn't quite in the mood to watch it. So
yeah, I'm not a fan of it, but it's also their first film, so there's a certain amount of a pass that has to be given, just because it's part of the it's a starting point for the evolution of these filmmakers.
Do you guys like Fargo?
Oh yeah, classic.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to see. It's been too long since I've seen it. I need to see it again.
Me
but
too.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah,
I. You know, there haven't been many misfires with the Coens. Even if it's something I haven't liked, I can still admire it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So our next director, do you want to announce who it is?
Oh, you go ahead.
Okay. starting on our next episode, we're going to start with just four movies per director. If we want to revisit them, you know, a lot of these people trying to do Hitchcock in four movies, good luck with that. Yeah. We're going to give it a crack later. That's not our next director, though. We are going to be talking about a man who Scott Weinberg over at Cinemackle in his Twitter post said, Joe Dante is to live action films what Don Bluth is to animated films. And lovely. I really think that that's quite appropriate.
Lovely.
We'll be tackling some of the films of Joe Dante, not necessarily the big ones like Gremlins and stuff, partially because we've already talked to the Gremlins flicks.
Yes. Whenever Josh is here, we talk
we
about the Gremlins films.
We should watch those again and again.
Yes, yes. But we're going to be starting off with The Burbs, the Tom Hanks classic. Is that the last real comedy that Tom Hanks did? Like that kind of comedy?
Well, you know what? Turner and Hooch came out like a few months after that, same year. So it was like, that's when he stopped really making those kind of Joe versus the Volcano type of movies.
Okay. It's a phenomenal film. I can't wait to start it next week. We're also going to be talking crap. You know what? I've got the list right here. If I was smart, I'd actually just pull it up and we'd talk about what other movies we're going to do. We are also going to be doing Explorers, which I talked about a couple weeks ago, but so briefly liking a lot. We have to do The Howling, and we're going to do our best. This one's going to be a bit tricky, but we want to talk about Matinee. The problem is the DVD is out of print, so trying to track one down to rent somewhere is going to be interesting.
Sucks. I've got it on VHS.
There is the...
Yeah, hard to find that way too, Ethan.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just saying. we're just going to leave that alone.
Talking through telepathy.
Yes, yes, indeed. Well, I knew he was going with it because I've already tried. But yes, we're going to start up next week with The Burbs. It shall be a heck of a lot of fun. Hope you'll tune in with us. But what's coming out in theaters this week, sir?
This week in theaters, we've got Eddie Murphy and Imagine That. For those of you who thought that Land of the Lost was too vulgar, well, you're going to love Imagine That.
Imagine That, another crappy Eddie Murphy movie.
The early reviews are that say that this is the gentlest, like most G-rated kids film to come out in a long time. Nothing offensive.
I thought Eddie Murphy retired. Whoa.
Yeah, me too.
Nope. He's got some projects in the works. Apparently, he might be playing Richard Pryor for Bill Condon. Yeah, that's still coming.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
so that's still coming. The remake of the Walter Matthau Robert Shaw thriller, The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3 with John Travolta and Denzel Washington and John Turturro, directed by Mr. Subtlety himself, Tony Scott.
Yay.
And then a film that's gotten a lot of good buzz, Sam Rockwell in Moon, opening in limited release.
That looks really interesting.
Yeah, very intriguing.
And then there's one more limited release.
Yes, Food! Exclamation point. No?
Nope. Tetro.
Oh, that's right. Very good. Yeah, June...
I figured you'd be all about that.
Well, I appreciate that. No, because at this point, Coppola is doing what... this is, of course, Francis Ford Coppola's Tetro. Apparently, he's going to do what David Lynch did for Inland Empires. He's picking the theaters himself and, like, personally going in the independent route with this movie.
Wow.
Like, it's not going to get a wide release. Apparently, he and his Zoetrope Studios are, like, going to decide in film by film, individual theater by theater, where it opens. So
that's interesting.
Yeah, but yeah, thank you for bringing up Tetro, of course. I can't
Absolutely.
Wait to see Tetro.
And finally, our DVDs for the week.
DVD releases, Burn Notice, Season 2. You can't go wrong with Bruce Campbell and Gabriel Anwar. Madea Goes to Jail. I wish that was just a true article I was just telling you about. But no, it's the name of a movie. Friday the 13th, the remake that came out this year, available in the extended killer cut. How could that movie possibly be more
violent? Extreme killer cut.
Okay, extreme killer cut.
I don't know.
And then also the theatrical cut, also available on Blu-ray.
You get an extra drop of blood. That's what you'll get.
Just one extra drop. Chess in Concert. This is one of the best musicals of the 80s. You guys know the song One Night in Bangkok by Murray Head. That comes from the musical Chess. So it's a concert version of the musical. Really great thriller. I can't get into the plot of the musical, but it's fantastic. The musical in concert is going to... It has Josh Groban and Idina Menzel, the star of Wicked, doing the concerts. That's going to be for you Chess fans like myself and one other person in Peoria. Good stuff. Criterion is releasing Max von Sydow in The Seventh Seal, one of the great Bergman films of all time. It's getting re-released.
I like that they're doing this. They're going through these movies that they did pretty bare bones originally.
Yeah.
And Criterion's going through and giving them more features and stuff. And
yeah.
New transfer.
Yeah. And some of these films have been out of print for a while, too. So it's great that they're back.
Yeah.
Yes. Friday the 13th, the original series is coming out in deluxe editions. You've got the final chapter, which is where Tom Savini did the nastiest, nasty death ever. It was supposed to be the last film. It stars Crispin Glover and Corey Feldman together at last. Friday the 13th, part 6, Jason Lives, one of my favorites of the series because it's very tongue-in-cheek, also available in a deluxe edition. And the worst in the series, number 5, A New Beginning, again, in a deluxe edition. This is all the stuff that was on the box set. So if you have the box set, you have this. This is all it, you know, being released separately. This is kind of like the Back to the Future release a few weeks ago.
Okay.
Woody Allen's What's Up, Tiger Lily, one of the funniest films Allen ever did early in his career. He took a Japanese thriller, dubbed it, and now it's a spy comedy about wanting the ultimate egg salad recipe. This is hysterical stuff. Very ahead of its time. It's okay. Good stuff. Speaking of very hipster humor, Riff Tracks. Yay, Riff Tracks.
They've got a slew of stuff coming out this week.
Bunch of stuff. Riff Track titles this week include Reefer Madness, the ultimate Do Not Take Marijuana or You Will Die movie, the original Roger Corman's Little Shop of Horrors, the ultimate Plan 9 from Outer Space from our friend Ed Wood, Carnival of Souls, and Missile to the Moon, all released by Riff Tracks this week. Awesome.
And there are two sets of shorts coming out, too.
Yes. For those of you who don't know who this is the guys who did Mystery Science Theater 3000 and The Film Crew. Whatever these guys do is gold. See it. You will laugh your arse off.
I still need to get you a copy of the Transformers riff because it is funny.
Oh, I'd love to hear that.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear that. Let's see. The Cell 2, the sequel nobody wanted with nobody from the original. Nobody from the original.
Like the Jennifer Lopez, Vincent D'Onofrio?
Yeah. And Vince Vaughn. Yeah. Tarsem Singh. Okay. Yeah, nobody.
I saw that in the theater.
The original?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
I was like 10 years old.
Holy crap, man.
Yeah. I remember hating that movie.
I hated it too. Awesome to look at, but kind of a crap movie. Did you see it, Melissa?
No.
Yeah, you didn't miss anything. It's all good.
Okay. No, yeah. You're good. You're good. Yeah. Available in Blu-ray. A lot of Blu-ray titles. Let's see. Fracture, Ghostbusters, John Adams, Doctor Strangelove, Miracle, one of the best Kurt Russell movies, Friday the 13th Part 2, Kickboxer, and The Beef in the greatest game ever played. Let's see.
Apparently the Ghostbusters release isn't all that great. The transfer, I mean, it's better than the DVD transfer, but I've been seeing Harry Knowles and Drew McQueenie talk about it over Twitter, and they're like, yeah, it's better, but it's still not a great transfer.
That sucks. But yeah. Depeche Mode, The Dark Progression. This is a documentary on the band. Yes!
Okay.
Wait.
Yes.
Okay, I just... All I ever wanted, all I ever needed, is here in my arms.
Wow.
Words are very unnecessary.
Dude, our show's already going too long anyway. People are already turning it off as it is.
Now do it as Matthew McConaughey.
All I ever wanted, man. All I ever
The man delivers. Thank you, Ethan.
Well done. You know, there's another someone I've been waiting to hear from. I'm hoping we'll hear from in the next week or two. I'm hoping we get a call from a certain Mr. Michael Bay.
Oh, that'd be great. I want to hear what's going on with Michael Bay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's,
okay, we're almost done with the list, I promise. The Diary of Anne Frank is coming out.
Sorry. I shouldn't laugh. It's a good movie.
Put on like the list for snarky reasons. But
no, it's not a snarky reason. It's a good. It's a pretty good movie. It's a very important story.
Yes.
But the first thing now that I think of Anne Frank is Clerks 2.
When he's so sad.
Gets her confused with
Helen Keller.
Oh my gosh, guys. Moving on. Let's salvage the show. Bergman's Island. This is the interviews with Ingmar Bergman, released to the Criterion Collection. Excellent.
It's like $15, so it's like, I mean, how?
What a steal.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. Cinderella in Concert. No, not Disney Cinderella. The 80s hair band Cinderella in Concert.
Yes.
You know who you are if you want this. And finally, our crap title of the week. The title of this documentary, musical documentary, is Britney Spears, Girls Are Always Right.
Hell yeah.
The original title of it was Britney Spears, Girls Are Always Right, ... unless you're Britney Spears.
Wow. Actually, I have one more thing to add to the list that I forgot to tell you about.
Go ahead.
I forget who owns the rights now. I think it's Shout Factory has picked up the rights to the Transformers cartoon series.
Wow.
So they're re-releasing the first season because Rhino had it originally and they've gone out of business and it's discontinued in like $60 a season now. But the first season, 25th anniversary edition, is coming out of Transformers. Not that great a show, but better than the movie.
But yeah, absolute classic Transformers. Thank you, Shout Factory. They also release all the Elvira's movie macabre.
Yeah, they've got a lot of good stuff.
Big fan of those guys.
So yeah, crud, we have voicemail. I'm going to, I think I'm going to save that for next week because we are running so stinking long right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's all good. Or you know what? I will put this voicemail in after the outro music. It'll be a bonus feature. It's from Billy Flynn from Geek Radio Daily. Ding. Thank you for it, sir. If you want to send us an email, you absolutely can. Hit us podcast, Dave, Melissa, Ethan, Perry, or Josh at ScreenGeeks.com. We have a voicemail number, but I can't remember what it is off the top of my head. To save my life, it's at the top of ScreenGeeks.com underneath the ink trailer, the ink ad. So, I guess that will just about wrap this bad boy up. Until next week, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
Melissa.
Matthew McConaughey.
Good night, everybody.
It is I, the wonderful Billy Flynn. I have returned. Between having to reinstall Zoom software because it was stopped transferring stuff, it losing all of my podcast subscriptions and my playlist, fixing that, oh yeah, and the wonderfulness that was the whole getting over the food poisoning during Starfest, I just wanted to say hi, and I'm back, and I'm actually listening to shows again, and that's fantastic. And where did I start when I started listening to my shows again? By God, I started at the only place you should be listening to, other than GeekRadioDaily.com, ding, Screen Geeks, baby, because I want to know about movies and entertainment, and when I do that, I have to go to you guys. So, if you've been listening to our show, you might know that my wife and I are again going through Star Trek, and we're going to be going through them in order again. And first season, Dagger of the Mind, is an amazing episode. It's the one you might remember where it turns out there's this planet that they were dropping some stuff off at, blah, blah, blah. There's a machine that can wipe people's minds, and it can be used to insert little thoughts. They can give you a whole new personality. They can make you think whatever they want to. And how do they do it? They put you in this damn chair, and there's this, you know, the machine. It's so Dollhouse. It's so absolutely Dollhouse. There's a moment in the show where Kirk, having helped the shapely, sexy doctor lady, who's the expert in this nonsensical field, escapes through an air tunnel. He runs to the door because here come the bad guys. He wants to distract them. He opens the door literally and says, "What, is it time for my treatment?" Oh, my God! Joss Whedon so took this and ran with it and made Dollhouse. I don't know that I have a lot to say other than that, but wow! That was just astounding. Okay, maybe it wasn't that astounding, but I found it to be rather, rather interesting. Oh, yeah, Ellen Dex. Dude, I saw Star Trek 3 times as well. Twice in IMAX, because, yeah, I'm a geek. That's just the way it goes. And I'm really looking forward to seeing Up this weekend. Hey, how about them not making a big deal about the kid being Asian? Sorry, I've been reading articles about how they haven't made a big deal about the kid being Asian, and I'm like, well, then shut up. You're making a big deal about it, and now it shouldn't matter at all. So hush. So I'm very glad that in an animated film and in any film, there was actually a minority role as a main character, and it didn't have to be this trumpeted. It's nice to see that we're getting to the point where stuff like that doesn't matter because it shouldn't because, well, you know, I'm babbling again. But anyway, guys, it's glad to be able to hear you again. Now make another show. Bye.